Welcome to Cinema Vino. This is episode X of Why Recorded. I'm Todd Wofford, and this is Travis Budd.
What?
This is our first broadcast of the new year. 2019 is going to be our year.
Get woke, stay woke.
Mm-hmm. This is going to be the year where we crush rhymes like weight. So anyway, we're drinking Anime Pinot Noir from the Willamette Valley, which is a place that my wife and I went to for her birthday last fall.
And you said this wine was one of those rare instances where what? It tastes good there?
I mean, it's like sometimes, I mean, everything tastes good at the winery when you're, you know, beautiful scenery and whatnot. The real test is when you come back home and it still tastes good. And this Pinot Noir definitely passes that test.
Cuts the mustard.
Mm-hmm. It's just easy drinking, but it's, you know, got some nice round ripe fruit to it. Well with food.
I liked it when you said it that way. It moved.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's got some nice flavor of plums. So New Year's, let's talk about New Year's resolutions. Have you got any New Year's resolutions that you're thinking about?
I mean, not any new ones. I'm just keeping up the old ones. Like, the only one that I've ever actually stuck to is several years ago. We're going to call it 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Could have been minus another 4 or 5 years from that, but...
Picture it.
My New Year's resolution was no more New Year's resolutions. Mm-hmm. And I ironically just keep that going every year.
That's kind of like wishing for more wishes. Mm-hmm. Magic lamp, which, I mean, everybody knows to do.
Yes.
What
about you?
This is going to be weird, and it's going to be a frank confession. I'm really trusting people who listen to this to continue to trust my reviews after I say this, but I'm making a resolution. I made a Spotify playlist of Phil Collins. I'm going to listen to more Phil Collins. Just because he does it for me.
Speaks to you?
Yeah, especially his Genesis stuff. It fills my rice bowl.
Didn't you tell me one time that, like, that was your first, like, sexual awakening? You had a dream about Phil Collins?
Mm-hmm. It was like a vision quest.
Huh.
I heard a voice in the distance talk about studio. And it was like, I am content.
All right, now I'm uncomfortable.
So anyway, that will be my resolution, to listen to more Phil Collins, and specifically Phil Collins with Genesis.
Okay.
You know. So, but also some Peter Gabriel.
And why not?
Maybe some of the early Heart stuff. But anyway, that's, you know, new year, new me. So then this podcast, we're going to talk about some stuff other than Phil Collins, I promise. We're talk about some superlatives of the year, our favorite movies that we watched. Travis's tastes tend to run more towards the comic book centric, so we're going to talk about that angle with him, then I'll share with you my overall favorite movies of the year, and then we're going to talk about Aquaman and our views on it. So, what was your favorite movie that you watched this year? And before you answer, I will say that Travis is a big fan of comic books, and if you want to tell the listeners at home, like, you know, your comic book fandom, where it stems from.
So, basically, I kind of learned to read with comics. Mm-hmm. At first, they were just kind of cute pictures on a page. And then as I got older and started learning to read, like, what I would read for fun is comic books. So, I've been a collector for years. I haven't, like, really kept up with it since probably around 2010, something like that. I'm behind, but I continue to buy the comics. So I have a ridiculous amount, a like huge stack of stuff I have yet to get through. So I'm not very current, but yeah, they were a big part of my childhood, and I thought I was going to be a comic book writer at some point. So a lot of my interest and views go that nerdy route.
And so if two people were at a bar having a discussion about comic books and Goodwill Hunting style, you'd be Matt Damon that could come over and shut them both down with your intense knowledge.
Yeah, yes, I hope so, unless it's something super recent and I'd look like an idiot, or they retcon something, which they often do.
How do you like those apples?
Applesauce, bitch.
So, with that in mind, share with us your favorite movie of 2018.
So the one that brought me the most joy was obviously Avengers Infinity War. It was, God, it just, it hit all the buttons I wanted. It was better than I thought it was going to be, actually. And I love Josh Brolin as Thanos. And he got to be Cable in Deadpool 2 in the same year.
Got to have his cake and eat it
too. Yeah, he got to play two excellent characters, and he did them both excellently.
Mm-hmm.
So that was definitely my favorite of the year, but take that again with a big old giant grain of rock salt or kryptonite.
Mm-hmm.
Because of my huge nerd boner comic book bias.
Mm-hmm. And that's okay. I mean, you know, I'm always a believer in when it comes to these kind of things, there's not a wrong answer.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like, that's the thing about opinions. People can have two different opinions, and both people can be right.
Same thing with assholes. People mm-hmm. can have assholes mm-hmm. and opinions.
When you assume, you make an ass out of you.
And umption.
But yes, I think in my list of great movies, I mean, my viewing experience this year has been a little more exhaustive. Is that the right word? Comprehensive. Maybe exhaustive is not the right word, because that's not flattering.
You go fuck yourself.
Mm-hmm.
How dare you?
It's been more comprehensive.
All right, you're right.
I've seen more. I would definitely put Avengers as my favorite comic movie of the year, and that's full recognition of Black Panther and all the cultural significance that it had. I enjoyed it. It was a good movie. If we're talking about sheer enjoyment, I liked Avengers a little better. Just because
the first one? Yeah.
Infinity War. Because it's like, you know, it had Black Panther in it. You know, it had Spider-Man in it. It had all it had Thor. Pretty much pick your favorite Marvel character, with a couple of exceptions if you haven't seen it. It hit all the high notes. It was great. And, you know, and I will have to really withhold judgment completely until we see the next one, Endgame. But it definitely paid off a lot of the stuff. Because there have been a lot of Marvel movies. I forget how many, 18, 19.
I mean, more if you don't count the ones MCU-centric from mm-hmm. Disney.
But even the MCU stuff, it's like there have been so many of them that, you know, if you to even comprehend Infinity War, you had to have seen the previous ones. And, you know, for that, it kind of rewards you by paying off a lot of the stuff that went on previously.
Gives you a little pat on the head. Like, hey, remember that thing? We're bringing it back. Look at you. Mm-hmm. Look how smart you are. Look how many movies you've watched.
Mm-hmm. Or the thing that you were wondering about in this movie, we're going to pay it off.
Yeah.
And I bet they do that again in the second movie. It's like, we're going to resolve the stuff that you've been wondering about.
I really do like that it feels like Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2 again.
Mm-hmm.
Is that it feels like half of a really good movie so far.
Mm-hmm.
Because Kill Bill was always meant to be just like one big, long fuck-off movie.
Mm-hmm.
But they were like, to sell more tickets, more time out of the year advertising, more hype. And Kill Bill had one of the best, to-be-continued moments in Volume 1. Mm-hmm. At the end, you're just like, oh, fuck yes, I cannot wait for the second one.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one was so different from the first one, a little bit in tone. Mm-hmm. It was great.
And they really felt like two distinct movies.
Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm hoping for with Infinity War. Because we got all the big old space battles. I mean, don't get me wrong. I will take more giant space battles.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and both movies, Kill Bill, Avengers, Infinity War, they both end with a massacre at the end. And so I anticipate, you know, Volume 2 of both stories to be completely different than Volume 1. So
let's kill Thanos.
Yeah. It's like I anticipate that same vibe where it's like people are going to see part two and it's like that was totally different than part one. And so completely different tone, everything like that. So yeah, I look forward to seeing how they resolve that. And I look forward to seeing what they do after that, this big, you know, event movie where they go with the Marvel Universe after that.
So what character is Uma Thurman in Infinity War? Who gets to kill Bill at the end?
Oh, man.
I'm guessing Iron Man or Cap.
I mean, I was gonna say it's gotta be Robert Downey,
or they might do a Thor.
Mm-hmm.
I can see where he was like, "You should have gone for the head," and then he was like, "I took your advice."
Mm-hmm. It might be Nebula. They might go left field.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no telling. I mean, I would say that Infinity War for me would be, because I'm gonna do an article this weekend. You'll see it probably by the time this podcast comes out. The top 8 movies of the year for me. And top 8 just because I can. That is an arbitrary number. But
What's your overall then for the year? That
for number one?
Yeah.
It's a movie I watched actually a week
ago. Also Infinity War? That's awesome, man. Me too.
Yeah, it's a small world. I was about to say 8 o'clock. a movie I watched called Roma. And
I know nothing about that, so you can generally tell me what it's about and the viewers at the same time.
We can have some expository dialogue. It's great. Roma is a film set in Mexico City, and you know it's and I jokingly thought of like the whole Seinfeld, the journey from Milan to Minsk, the Rochelle, but it's a woman's like, you know, it's basically a year in her life, give or take, you know, young woman who works as a maid in this kind of upper middle class household, and you know, set against the backdrop of like, you know, revolution, protests, violence, yada yada, all the stuff going on around her. And it's this very quiet, very thoughtful drama, character study. People have complained that it's too slow, but I thought the slowness, the way that it kind of unfolded gradually was part of its charm. It's like watching somebody paint when you know that the painting's going to be beautiful, even if they're painting slowly. It's like it's kind of hypnotic in a way. It's like watching this beautiful artwork being constructed. So I enjoyed the slowness of it.
That's cool.
You knew what it was going to look like was going to be great at the end.
More of like a journey.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
It was. I mean, it was a great film.
All right. I did not see this film, but I want to know what you think, because for some reason out of left field, I have this Lady Gaga song stuck in my fucking head. Mm-hmm. But how was A Star Is Born?
Star Is Born is also going to be in the top 8.
It was it? Mm-hmm. Where'd you put it?
It would be more towards the 8th range. I believe it is 8th. On the list, but that's no small feat when you're talking about over a field of hundreds of movies. Getting in the top 8 is not a bad thing.
I know it's coming out on DVD here in like a week, and I kind of want to snag it and see it because I feel like my mom would dig it and be up her alley.
Part of a movie like A Star Is Born and a lot of other movies like Bohemian Rhapsody, even the Mary Poppins sequel that came out. And I'm sure that everybody out there can share with this. It's like when you see the trailers, you see the posters, and you roll your eyes, and you think that's going to suck. That's kind of how I was with The Star Is Born, especially when it's like Lady Gaga. It's like, oh, somebody in some suit in some studio somewhere thought, well, let's get her a movie to be in. Let's get her a vehicle to make her, you know, a movie star actress, you know. And it was, to me, looking at it going in, it was like a product built around Lady Gaga. Mm-hmm. And I was very skeptical of it. But then I was very surprised at how actually good she was, and then good that the movie was itself. Not only did it seem going in a product, but it seemed like they were taking a story that had been done so many times before, you know, previously. You know, the A Star Is Born has been made for almost 100 years now in cinema. The first one came out in the 30s.
Oh, so yeah. This is a fourth remake?
Yeah. Or
third remake, but fourth film with the same title.
I think it's the fourth film, but yeah. They've done it like the Up Close and Personal with Michelle Pfeiffer and Robert Redford. Do you remember that movie that came out in the 90s?
No.
That's another version. There's been variations of that forever, of like the mentor and the young protege fall in love. That's been done 100 times. So, I would, you know, it's like, man, this is a typical Hollywood thing where they just recycle. They just keep bringing stuff back. And so anytime you watch something like that and it impresses you, then it to me, it makes it that much better.
Yeah, it feels like they just get like two people, two actors that you haven't seen. Like, hey, we're going to get Kris Kristofferson and Dolly Parton. And like, wouldn't it be cool to just watch them fuck?
Barbara Streisand, but yes.
Barbara Streisand? Mm-hmm. Dolly Parton? No? All right, fine. And then Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper, like, don't you guys just want to see them bone? Like, yes, of course. Mm-hmm. Well, we're not going to do that, but we will make a movie with them. Like, all right.
Yeah.
Polite golf clap.
But it was a good movie with, obviously, as you know, good music.
Yeah, I've only listened, like, one, two of the songs. I don't know why it stuck in my head. It's because it's in every single meme or every single thing you see on Facebook. You're like, oh, watch this person. I'm like, what the fuck song is this? So through osmosis, it has gotten stuck in my head. And then I sought it out so I could drill it into my brain. So what are the other big films that you think that you've liked?
Bohemian Rhapsody is on the list for me. And that's something that, you know, polarized critics. I mean, that was something that some critics didn't like. People loved it. Like,
I didn't know Bryan Singer directed it.
He directed it up to a point, and then he was fired.
3 weeks before the end or something like that?
Which, I mean, in the filmmaking world, that's a huge deal because obviously, you know, they had to bring in another guy, I believe his name is Dexter Fletcher, to finish it.
Fucking dick.
You know, because I guess, you know, Bryan Singer was showing up late. He was not showing up at all. You know, there was all kinds of turmoil behind the set. And they had to bring in another guy to help finish it and then do post-production on it, which, again, filmmaking world post-production is a huge deal.
Right.
That's a big part of putting the movie together. So he was there for a good chunk of it, but then, you know, was let go. So, and that's another reason why that movie was surprisingly good, given all the turmoil. Usually when you're dealing with directors getting fired, and, you know, unhappy cast and crew, the movie suffers greatly. Most movies suffer. But that one seemed pretty, I did not know that going in, and the movie seemed pretty seamless to me.
So I've got three favorite movies that I have not watched. Three that were on my list to watch that I never got around to. Mm-hmm. That is A Quiet Place, mm-hmm. which sounds like the whole Bird Box fad is like, ooh, what if we took the monsters from The Quiet Place that you had to be quiet for, not make sound, mm-hmm. and then make it to where you couldn't look at them, you couldn't see them.
Yeah.
You couldn't do it, otherwise you're in trouble.
Yeah.
And then, so I've heard that one was great. There was Hereditary with Toni Collette, which is a weird ghost witch possession bullshit movie. Mm-hmm. Scary movie. Something I would like to watch during the day with subtitles on, with the blinds open.
Yeah.
and the volume down. And then the other one was Nicolas Cage in Mandy, which was a big, like, revenge plot. It looked like a Hellraiser movie at first, but I've heard it is awesome as well.
Missed that one.
But one of the offshoot ones that I did see that I liked was Annihilation with Natalie Portman. Because it's got weird kind of, it's a sci-fi kind of H.P. Lovecraft thing. And the book, obviously, better than the movie.
Yeah.
But the movie, pretty damn good. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. I think it was the first book essentially in a trilogy, but they've just wrapped it up in a nice, neat little bow. They're just like, we're only going to do the first movie because that's really the only one that you could actually film.
Yeah.
And they calls it a day.
I respect that, though. That need to be succinct. One movie that I'm going to take care of in a couple of days that, you know, didn't make it in time to make this cut of the top eight movies, but it's gotten acclaim everywhere else, is If Beale Street Could Talk. And so it's the Moonlight filmmakers are doing that.
Okay.
And so that's one thing that I'm not going to get it in time to possibly, again, I don't want to just automatically throw it on the list if it doesn't belong, but it could be. And if it does, it'll get an honorary spot on the top eight list. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those where the top three movies for me all got 5-star reviews. And I kind of made a conscious decision that I would not do very many 5-star reviews. I mean, maybe like 2 or 3 per year.
Right.
Tops.
To leave it, yeah.
That way it means something. I always respected Leonard Maltin because it's like he very rarely ever gave 4-star reviews. He did 1 to 4 stars. And
idiot.
And it's like that way, if he gave a 4-star review, it really meant something. It's like, you know, holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a shortcoming I thought of Roger Ebert. I loved Roger Ebert, too. Maltin and Ebert were my two favorite critics. And Ebert kind of gave out too many 4-star reviews. It was like handing out too many trophies to where it's like it kind of cheapened the idea of giving a movie a perfect review. And so I only gave out 3 5-star reviews this year.
You don't like Siskel and Ropa?
And Siskel and Ebert. I mean, yeah, I mean, I love Siskel, too. I was always partial to Ebert because he and I kind of, you know, you kind of naturally, like, identify more with somebody who kind of their reviews line up with how you would review the movie.
Right.
You know, it's like you feel more comfortable. Siskel and I tended to butt heads a little more about opinions.
But a lot of heated arguments there.
Yes, in my insane teenage head.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was, you know,
fuck you, Siskel, you're a hack.
It's like we lined up a little more opinion wise, and so, but yeah. you know, for those reading my reviews on moviereviews.us.
What was that?
Moviereviews.us.
I don't think you're close enough to the mic. Hold on, my mic's up. Moviereviews.us. So,
that was spoken in Travis's commanding baritone. You know, you'll see very few 5-star reviews. And of the top 8 movies that are going to be on this list, only 3 got 5-star reviews.
Which ones?
Roma was one. The Favorite, starring Olivia Colman and Margot Robbie.
Huh.
And Rachel Weisz.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Is that what... Okay, Colman, she's... yep, she's going to be Queen. The new Queen Victoria in the Victoria series.
Queen Elizabeth.
Well, fuck my jeans.
Yeah.
Wait.
Same idea.
In The Crown?
Mm-hmm. Should be Queen Elizabeth.
Oh, there it is.
Should be the middle-aged Queen Elizabeth.
Cool.
And it would not shock me if that movie won some Academy Awards.
What was your third one?
They Shall Not Grow Old, which is the World War I Peter Jackson.
What was it, a documentary?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Where he colorized and...
That's racist.
Rendered a... World War One, like the footage, like this kind of that rickety, you know, old timey World War One footage battlefield, made it high definition, made it like put in sound. I mean, he used his Weta people to fill it with sound, fill it with Foley, you know, music, and he used narration from actual like World War One troops. They gave him unprecedented access to like the archives of, you know, soldiers' confessions, and he took those, you know, remastered them and made them sound like they were recorded yesterday.
Badass.
And the footage looks like high definition, colorized World War One footage. It's amazing.
Where was Weta Studios and where is Peter Jackson from? Isn't that Australia?
New Zealand. And yep, actually,
never heard of it.
Travis works with, I used to work with a Kiwi gentleman, and he informed me that you pronounce New Zealand as Z-I-L-L-A-N-D, New Zealand. But anyway, now that we've knocked out the superlatives, we're going to come back here in a second after this word from our sponsor, Hampton Cigarettes. We're going to talk about Aquaman. So
I enjoyed Deadpool 2 and Ant-Man as well.
I like season 4 of Seinfeld. We'll be back after these messages.
What?
So let's talk about Aquaman.
Aquaman.
Yeah, I think it was very polarized amongst critics and audiences alike.
Polarized.
And again, Travis is somebody that if this were a TV show, like a courtroom drama, you could swear Travis into court as an expert on comic books. What were your thoughts on Aquaman?
I really wish I knew more quotes from My Cousin Vinny, or the old guy, like, talking about cars at the end, so I could show that I'm an expert on comic books. I liked it. It was good. It was enjoyable. Like, I didn't feel the 2.5 hours that took place. I kind of know Jason Momoa and how he is, and, you know, how he would act. Kind of a badass but friendly biker, essentially, that has superpowers. That swims a lot. And Amber Heard, who is generally pretty good, but has a shitty fucking wig the entire time. Bothered me the entire time. I really liked the secondary villain, Black Manta, because he's made such an cool character. And the... I'm being attacked by a dog.
And there's our new puppy.
He's made such a cool character in... some of the DC comic books that before he was just a crazy ass fuck up with like a really big head mask.
So yeah, we have a young puppy, and he is 13 weeks old, and I could relate to this. He piddles when he gets food. He piddles when he sees you for the first time in a long time. You know, there's just always little dribblets of pee-pee.
Describe to our listeners, which there are many, Did you see that? I did a joke about our amount of listeners. What the term piddle means.
Little tiny driblets of urine.
Well, we've all been there.
And I think his Game of Thrones name would be Lord Piddlington. Anyway, so...
Aquaman, your thoughts. Black man was cool. The main villain, meh. That was my thesis statement. TLDR.
Yes, but I felt like the movie was TLDR.
Ooh.
That
sound was me drinking wine.
And, I mean, full confession, I bought a giant Aquafina bottled water going into this movie and drank it quickly. And I'm sitting there on the right side of the theater listening to flowing river going through the Dolby surround. And, you know, I've made a point of, like, I'm not going to leave a movie to go to the bathroom. I'm going to hold it till the end. I'm going to make it. I can do it. And it doesn't help when the whole thing sounds like waves crashing on a shore. It's like, I am going to fill my britches with urine. And it's just like, so many plots, so much movie, so many characters, so much stuff going on.
Yeah, they shoehorned in a lot.
I really respected the movie Bumblebee. It's a Transformers movie, and it's the best one that they've ever done. And because they actually told, like, a story, and they had actual characters, and it was, like, less is more. It was an actual movie. It was an actual story. It made sense. So, you know, they could have done, like, a, you know, the typical Transformers. It's going to be 3 hours long, and it's going to be basically a live-action cartoon. But they made a good movie out of it. And that was, again, it means something when you're pleasantly surprised. And that was the case there. With Aquaman, it was like, this is, I mean, it's not a bad movie, don't get me wrong. And for people who are wondering, you know, I gave it 3 stars. And 3 stars is generally like, not the best movie in the world, not the worst movie in the world.
But now, okay, so your love of Aquafina bottles notwithstanding, do you think if you had been sitting there watching it and didn't have to piss like a racehorse the whole time, like, would you have noticed? Like, was it entertaining enough to be like, all right, this keeps my interest? Or did you, I mean, it's difficult to ask, did you find your thoughts wandering? But obviously, you had to pee.
Well, yes. And it was like, there was the whole Attack of the Clones thing going on at the end there, where it's like, you got this big, all-digital battle between these all-digital armies shooting lasers at each other for a good stretch of time. And it's like, this gets old after a while. You know, I wish they would wrap this up.
Yeah,
you know, it's like that's that kind of thing. I mean, it was really cool in Lord of the Rings. It started to lose the new car smell in Star Wars, but by now it's like that's enough of that. Where it's like you just see nothing but like fake people shooting each other.
Right. It was. I would put it on par with the Wonder Woman film, which was really good. It is just under. If let's say Rotten Tomatoes gave Wonder Woman a 70-something%. And I think that's somewhat accurate. I would say Aquaman is accurate at what I last saw, like 60-63%. Like, yeah, that's about fair.
Mm-hmm.
Switching gears real quick, though, because one that I also saw fairly close to Aquaman was Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which I really didn't think the animation looked a little weird. And I was like, well, it's not even the normal Peter Parker Spider-Man, but it looked interesting. So I was like, all right, I'll give it a look-see. But I fucking loved it. I liked it better than Aquaman. And this being taped a few days after the Golden Globes, I think, it was already voted, you know, best animated series of the year for Golden Globes. And I was like, yeah, I enjoyed it better than Incredibles 2, which I been waiting forever to watch. So what do you think about the Spider-Man?
And full disclosure for readers at home, I am a nerd. I would say my nerdery runs more towards movies, while Travis runs more towards comic books. So it's like in a way we kind of, in comic movies, we kind of complement each other. You know, it's like we kind of, it's a perfect match. You know, I can look at it from more the movie angle. And from a movie angle, I loved Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And the Spider-Verse, it was great. I enjoyed it a lot. So, I mean, I thought it was a lot of, I was very pleasantly surprised with that one as well. To me, if anything, I've learned from this list of movies I made this year is like, it's all about the movies that surprise you.
And you rated, I don't remember exactly what your rating was, but did you rated it higher than Aquaman?
Yes.
Because I waited until I had seen them before I read the review of each one. And I was like, yeah, pretty spot on with both of them. I didn't even catch the, in Aquaman, oh shit. Guys, it's okay. I didn't spill.
Take two.
I didn't even catch in Aquaman the just how much fucking subplots or how many there were in it until you like spelled it out. And I was like, shit. Yeah, there's really, if you spread it out and you did it well and you did a deep dive of some of the characters, that could have been like three movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To me, it's like there's a great scene and a river runs through it. And you've seen River Runs Through It.
Nope. Sure.
Okay. Well, there's a great scene in there where I think it's the Brad Pitt character is trying to learn how to write, and their preacher dad, you know, he keeps the kid keeps bringing in essays to the dad, and the dad keeps saying half as long. And then the kid goes back and rewrites it and brings it back in half as long. And the kid goes back and rewrites it and brings it back in until it's like one sentence. And the dad's like, good, very good. I think movies a lot of times are the same way, where it's like
brevity.
Mm-hmm. It's soul of wit. It's just like, you know, all these subplots, all this stuff, it's like lose some of it. And yeah, save it for later. And there's nothing wrong with putting something in Tupperware and putting it away for later.
Yeah, there's they did a good job. So basically Aquaman needs two separate casts of people around him. He'll have, you know, his dad on land and all that. And this one is much more exploring, like, his life in the water, you know, mm-hmm. as you should.
Yeah.
But he's exploring on how to be king or how to, you know, he's, the throne should be coming to him. But he doesn't walk amongst the people. He doesn't, like, he goes there one time to infiltrate some bullshit and then gets chased away. And then the rest of the time it's him, like, you know, trying to overcome this stuff and seeing if he wants to be king. But they don't show him amongst the people. They don't show him making friends or getting to know anything like it. They've got Willem Dafoe as Vulko, like the vizier of the king.
Or Henry Ducard.
Ducard. Who? Who the fuck?
Batman Begins.
Henry Ducard.
Liam Neeson.
Yeah. Liam Neeson's in Aquaman?
No.
You're playing yourself.
Well, I mean, he is the Ra's al Ghul, like the, you know, the mentor.
All right, you don't know a lot about comics, so I'm going to forgive you for a lot of what you just said.
Well, he is the established actor with gravitas who steps in with the young superhero.
Okay, that makes more sense,
to what mentor. You said. Yes. It's like, you know, your hands will take care of themselves. Rub your chest. It's like he's the person who, yes. like, prepares him
for mentor. The...
Yes.
Okay. That makes more sense than the bullshit you... like, Ra's al Ghul is like Vulko? No! How no. dare you? I mean, I will draw you a chart, sir. But talking about the actors, yes, 100%, you're right.
Yeah. It's like we have to have somebody mentor him who the audience will recognize.
Right. But he's the only real tie, that and Nicole Kidman. But, like, you don't see him, if he's going to lead these people, he should know the people. I don't know. They don't even have, like, if they had had another scene of him in the, holy shit. What is the Atlantis version of a bar? How do you get your liquid out of the drink?
Mm-hmm.
They just have a shit ton of, like, alcoholic Go-Gurts down there. That's what it is. Because you got to hold it to your lips and just go... That's going to be great for you viewers. I love that sound.
It would be worth it just for that sound effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a boot stuck in mud, only water.
It's like prom night for me. On a scale of 1 to 10, how faithful would you say this Aquaman was to the comics?
You know, it was actually pretty faithful. I mean, cast anybody else in the role, and it would be, you know, spot on. But they decided to go Khal Drogo and make him just badass. Like, it is really difficult to make fun of Aquaman for talking fish and being a little bitch.
Mm-hmm.
If you're looking at him and you're like, well, that's Jason fucking Momoa.
It's Khal Drogo.
Yes.
A crown for a king.
Shit. See what that is you for.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
That's an actor. That's not any Dothraki.
No, but it kind of sounds like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
There's that, my stars. Yeah, I enjoyed it. But Spider-Man, Into the Spider-Verse came out of left field and became one of my favorite December comic book movie of the month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. True story. So, yeah, this has been Cinema Vino, episode X of Why Recorded. So, we thank you guys for listening. And
hey, take care of yourselves and each other.
Make love to each other.
Stay turnt, my friends.
I like all these. We're still working on an outro phrase.
I'm stealing them all from Critical Role. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. Stay pink and oily. But I like make love to each other. We're going to stick with make love to each other.
Check yourself for lumps.
Turn around. Don't drown.
This is Todd Wofford and Travis Budd saying,
think about what you've done. But yeah, we will see you down the river.